behind the back, wrap around, and climbing the ladder is Dante Hall.
Sexton. Step back. Good! Patty at three. Oh, he's a flamethrower! What a shot! 6-3 to the win! It's good! It's good! It's good! Colin Sexton made the floater! They'll review it! But oh, mercy! Colin Sexton may have saved the season!
Tigers set to trigger it in. Smart gets it into Watford. Threw it away. He'll run it down to the backcourt. Hugh will take it to the top of the arc. Watford three at the buzzer, blocked by Herb. The putback, no. The buzzer sounds. And Bama hangs on. Oh, my goodness.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast, your source for all things Alabama basketball. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network, and you can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24 during this exciting time where Alabama is moving on to the Sweet 16 next weekend in L.A. to face number one seed North Carolina. The game will be played Thursday night, and it'll be the game or the second game of the evening, and it will be likely around 8:30, 8:39, 8:40, depending on how long the game before them goes. But nonetheless, Alabama will be playing in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament for the third year in the last four, and the third time in 5 years that Nate Oates has been in at Alabama. And I'm going to kind of dive into that shortly after I break down the game, preview North Carolina, the North Carolina game, because what Nate Oates has done at Alabama in the NCAA tournament has been nothing short of remarkable. The first time in my 32 years of living here on planet Earth, I have only seen Alabama make the Sweet 16 one time, and that was in their Elite Eight run in 2004. Since Nate Oates has gotten here 5 years ago, I've seen three now. Absolutely incredible. And I'll kind of touch on that later on in the podcast. But Alabama defeated Grand Canyon, 12-seeded Grand Canyon, off their upset win of St. Mary's on Friday night in what sounded like a road game. Incredible fan support in Spokane for Grand Canyon. We thought it was all Gonzaga fans, but their student section rocked out. Obviously, they're not too far from Spokane, comparably speaking, to Alabama, but their fans were electric. It makes the games, win or lose, it makes the games that much more entertaining and exciting to watch. And you could tell when it started to flip for Grand Canyon, that crowd started becoming a bigger factor. But give Alabama credit, man. They fought in a street fight with a team that's what they want to do. They want to get to the line. They want to get fouled a lot. They're one of the best teams in the country of getting to the foul line and getting personal fouls called on them. And that's what happened. But Alabama, a team that is a finesse team, that has never really shown a pulse defensively for majority of the year, especially against more physical teams such as Tennessee. And that felt like a game against Tennessee for the longest. All the fouls were being called on Alabama. Grand Canyon was being the more physical team, going at the rim every single possession. But Alabama really bowed up in the final 6-7 minutes ever since Jaren Stevenson fouled out, which with around 6 minutes to go, Alabama just flipped a switch defensively as well. They didn't foul, but I think one or two times they held Grand Canyon scoreless, I believe, for the final 4 minutes or so of the basketball game, which is not something any Alabama fan that followed the team this year would have ever thought would happen. But nonetheless, in the NCAA tournament, in the round of 32, Grand Canyon's a solid team. Tyne Grand Foster is a future NBA basketball player. And I thought Rylan Griffin did a really good job one-on-one against him most of the game. He did get his. He got 29 points. He struggled at the free throw line, which is kind of surprising to me. He's a pretty good free throw shooter, but he went 9 of 16 from the line. And 9 of 22 overall from the field to score 29 points on the game for the game. And it seemed like Alabama had no answer for him in the second half. He's just getting to the line at will, getting to the rim, making tough shots. But I thought Rylan Griffin played his tail off majority of the game against Grant Foster. Had Diabate on him. We'll speak on him in a second, who I thought was overall the player of the game. Obviously, Mark Sears had 26 points. We'll dive into the box score here in a second. But Diabate made the biggest impact on defense and surprisingly on offense at the end of the game when Alabama needed him the most. Scored 4 points in the final 2.5 minutes to really separate the lead and to give Alabama a little bit of breathing room and kind of get the tension and the pressure off of them in that game. So let's just go into the team stats and kind of see where things fell. And this was not a game where either team shot really well. I'd say both teams shot very poorly. Grand Canyon, which isn't known to be a highly efficient shooting team in general, but they were really bad tonight. They took their average in threes at the end of the game. They had 23 point attempts, which is right at their average per game. But it seemed like they were forcing threes way too much in the first half. They were settling. I thought they did a lot better second half of attacking the rim like they want to. They want to get to the free throw line as much as they can. And they got there 37 times compared to Alabama's 22. So they shot it really poorly, but I thought a lot of it was from three. They were 16 of 36 overall outside of the three from inside the paint, which below 50% for that team really spoke volumes of how Nick Pringle played on the interior. I thought he was as active as I've seen him all season defensively. He's had his problems, you know, emotionally, whether it be in practice or in games. He'd let it get the best of him a lot. He even had a technical on the bench for breaking a marker / clipboard or marker board on the bench after a foul call was called on Alabama. And Nate Oates also got a technical in the game. But Nick Pringle really, really held his own inside. He altered a lot of shots. He didn't get a lot of blocks, but he altered a lot of shots on that end. Thought Jaren Stevenson played fairly well around the rim also. But held Grand Canyon to 32% overall shooting, 10% from three, being 2 of 20. Alabama made 8 threes, only shot 25%. So they shot right around their average attempts, but 3 less than their average makes per game. And it didn't matter. You know, live by the three, die by the three. No, Alabama doesn't play that way. They showed tonight that they had it in them to win a rock fight or a street fight, and they did it. The threes weren't falling. I mean, I think they missed 5 or 6 straight threes at one point. They kept shooting them, but they also attacked the basket a lot as well, and they finished up 16 of 34 overall from inside the arc, which is well below their average per game as well. So it just shows that the defenses were playing really well, and there was a lot of misses around the rim that Alabama and Grand Canyon both typically make. So it was a very rough game offensively for both. Now, rebounds, it was a struggle for Alabama in the first half. At one point, they were down 6-1 offensive rebounds, and they were down 8 total on rebounds in general. Grand Canyon was just dominating the boards. But by the end of the half, they were tied in offensive rebounds and overall. And at the end of the game, Alabama ended up with 20 offensive rebounds to Grand Canyon's 15 and 50 total rebounds to Grand Canyon's 41. So Alabama really flipped the script from what happened in the first 15, 20 minutes. In the second half is when they really dominated the boards. Alabama had 13 assists on 24 made shots, which is a really good ratio for them. Had 10 total steals. It was a kind of a sloppy game turnover-wise. There was a time where the tempo was going too fast for either team, and that's saying something for Alabama, because there was a time where Mark Sears got fouled, and he just laid there flat on his back, just exhausted, because it was just up and down, turnover after turnover, missed shot, just going up and down. And both teams were flat out gassed in the second half. You thought Alabama might do that to Grand Canyon, but they ended up doing it to themselves, which was super surprising. But Grand Canyon had 14 turnovers, Alabama's 13. Fast break points were pretty even, 15. Grand Canyon actually had more fast break points than Alabama, 15 to 13. The fouls, Alabama had 26 to Grand Canyon's 21. Now, it did seem like Alabama's fouls, even though two of those were technical fouls, but it seemed like Alabama was just getting the short end of the stick when it came to the foul discrepancy in the second half especially. Now, I'm typically a referee apologist. I'm not going to lie. I'm not one to blame the referees when things go bad. But for me to say that the officiating was horrible for both sides, especially in the first half, I would have rather it stayed like it was in the first half moving to the second than what I saw in the second half. The second half felt like an SEC basketball game, especially on the road, to where Alabama was just getting called for a foul every single trip. I think for 8 straight trips, Alabama got called for a foul on defense, which it just ruins the flow of the game. It ruins, you know, people's interest in the game. The players just keep going full speed and then stop. Going full speed, you just can't get a rhythm in the game or a flow on offense on either end. So the officiating was absolutely terrible, both ends. I thought Alabama got the short end of the stick for the most part. But give them credit for bouncing back, fighting through that like a tough, good team does. And it was incredible to see them fight through this kind of game where they only scored 72 points. I believe 71 is the season low for Alabama, and I think they've done it twice, both in losses. And to win a game 72 points in the NCAA tournament, it doesn't matter what seed Grand Canyon is. They beat a really solid St. Mary's team that beat Gonzaga 2 times out of 3, who just happened to destroy Kansas and go into the Sweet 16. So all teams are good in the NCAA tournament. So it doesn't matter who it's against. The fact that they did that after what season they've gone through defensively is remarkable. Let's head to the box score, see how everybody did individually. Now, Latrell Reitzel, I haven't mentioned yet, and thank goodness we got good news off of that, because Latrell Reitzel going out for this game with a head injury on, he ended up fouling a guy that was shooting a 3-pointer in the corner, which it looked like he stuck his leg out and tripped up Latrell, where Latrell got an elbow to the head. Now, if you remember, Reitzel was out several games this year with a head injury, most likely a concussion. I don't think they ever came out and said it was, but we all know it's a concussion. And to my knowledge, he's had multiple in his career at Cal State Fullerton, so this isn't his first rodeo with concussions. But he went out after only playing 11 minutes in the first half. And that's where Alabama fans started probably getting a little uneasy, because that's their best shooter. And I thought he struggled for most of the first half, but he is a guy that you want to have out there for 25, 30 minutes every game. But thank goodness at the end of the game, Nate Oates said that he will be available to play against North Carolina on Thursday, which is huge news, huge relief that he's okay, most importantly. But secondarily, Alabama's going to have their best shooter against North Carolina, where they're definitely going to need him to be full strength. But Mark Sears led the way for Alabama with 26 points. He had 12 rebounds. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a 6'1" guard that does not have very good hops. He tried to dunk a ball on Friday night and didn't come close. But he had 12 rebounds against very, very athletic big men around the rim, showing how much he did not want this to be his last game potentially in college. But he had 26, 12, 6 assists, 3 steals. He was great defensively. 5 of 11 from 3, 8 of 18 overall. Just a all-American top performance again for Mark Sears. He's had an incredible tournament, incredible season. Rylan Griffin was second on the team with 13 points. Thought he played really well. 4 of 8 from overall, 2 of 6 from 3. And I thought most of his great work was done on the defensive end, which has been his calling card the 2 years he's been in Alabama. Alabama battled a lot of foul trouble, had two starters that had four fouls each with Griffin and Nelson, and then Jaren Stevenson ended up fouling out with 5 minutes to go. But Rylan Griffin did great playing without fouling in the second half, not fouling out, because that would have been a big blow for Alabama. Grant Nelson disappeared once again in his second game in the NCAA tournament. You have to wonder if the lights may be just a little too bright for him. I hate to say that about the kid, because he's contributed a lot over this season with Alabama. I love the guy, and he's an extremely hard worker, you can tell. But you just have to wonder about the talent difference, the speed of the game, especially in the NCAA tournament. It's a different speed out there. And he only ended up with 3 points in 17 minutes and only one rebound. He had one rebound in 20 minutes against Charleston. So that's two rebounds in 37 minutes for the 6'11". Supposed to be the starting center for Alabama. He did have two blocks and a steal. So defensively, he was decent. But there's a reason he only played 17 minutes, is that he got in foul trouble. He really struggled offensively, could not rebound the ball. He got blocked by a 5'9", 5'10" guard in Blackshear. And he just really struggled. I mean, there's nothing else to say about him. Aaron Estrada, 4'14" overall, 8 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 steals. I mean, the two guards in the backcourt for Alabama, my goodness, they were incredible defensively. They were stripping guys that were going in for an easy layup. Aaron Estrada made a great hustle play down the baseline or the sideline to where he just came up behind the guy on a fast break and just took it away from him and passed it ahead and ended up scoring some points on that. But, you know, he struggles shooting the ball. He has both games so far in the tournament. So maybe a little bit of rest will do him some good, because he is definitely going to be needed against North Carolina's extremely good backcourt. Off the bench, Muhammad Diabate, my guy. As a former co-host on this podcast, Matthew Landry has always called him Baby Herb. Baby Herb. He's not quite as tall as Herb Jones was, but the effort, the winning plays this kid makes is incredible. He had two blocks, one of them on a breakaway that was going to be a slam for Grand Canyon. Saved 2 points there and a lot of momentum, because that crowd would have went crazy if he would have made that dunk. But Diabate hustled, got the chase down block. He had 5 rebounds. All of them were offensive. 2 of those ended up in points late in the game. One of them was an and one after a missed free throw by Mark Sears with a little less than 3 minutes to go in the game. So everything Muhammad Diabate does is impactful. Defensively, he's a great on-ball defender. He's even protect the rim some, and he's a guy that you just put out there and just let him do his thing, and he's going to be effective in whatever he does. Nick Pringle had 6 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks as well, 4 offensive rebounds. The one play I just mentioned that Diabate had the and one play off of the missed free throw by Sears was because Nick Pringle kept the ball alive, tapped it to Muhammad Diabate while in between two other dudes, and Diabate got the bucket and the harm. So he had 2 monster dunks. Those are the only times he scored from the field, 2 of 4 from the line. He was as energetic, as an impactful as I've seen him all year. And he got that technical on the bench. That let me know as a fan that he wants this so bad. Now, he can be a head case. He can look a little psycho out there running around crazy when he gets mad, but that lets me know that he's into the game. If he wasn't like that and he was just pouting or had his head down, I would have a different view on that. But I love the energy. Sam Walters had 3 points, and what a big bucket it was in the second half where Alabama was just struggling to get anything going. He was 1 of 5 from 3. He just needed to see one go down. And hopefully that will get him going for next week. I don't know how much he'll play. He only plays about 10 to 15 minutes now in the tournament. But if he can just come in and get, you know, 2 or 3 threes in his short time in the game, that's all they need from him to make an impact. Muhammad McGee didn't score, and Jaren Stevenson ended up fouling out, only playing 13 minutes. Going to Grand Canyon, very valiant effort for the Lopes. Very good team. They finished the season 30-5. And Tyon Grant Foster, there's not much else to say about him. I said it kind of in the open. 29 points, 3 blocks, 2 steals, 8 rebounds. Incredible effort. If he was just better from the free throw line, this game would have been a totally different, which that's Grand Canyon as a whole missing 14 free throws. But I love watching this kid play. His story is incredible with the heart condition that he had. And just coming from that, being so resilient and becoming who I think is going to be a future NBA player. I think he'll get drafted this year and it could make a big impact in the league. But he was the only guy that scored in double figures for Grand Canyon. They had 3 guys that scored 8 points or more. They had Colin Moore, they had Gabe McLaughlin, and then Duke Brennan each scored 8 points. And then Ray Harrison had 6 points overall. They stick to their 7-man rotation. And they only got 2 points off the bench, while Alabama had 20. So that 20-2 edge, I mean, that was all the difference, especially with Grand Canyon having one guy foul out, and that puts you down to 6. And with the tempo Alabama plays, you really need more depth. And that's really all I have over this game. It was an incredible game. It was an exhausting game as a fan. When Grand Canyon went up 58-55 with 6 minutes left after Tyon Grant Foster made that jumper on the baseline, it was not looking good. Momentum-wise, I mean, momentum is everything in basketball. And from that point on, the final 6 minutes, Alabama outscored Grand Canyon 17-3, the final 6:03. Grand Canyon scored 61 points with 4:05 left. They didn't score for the final 4:05. So that was an extremely good defensive game for Alabama. And we're going to kind of preview here Alabama against number 1 seed North Carolina. If you remember, Alabama played a 4 overtime game against North Carolina in Maui last year, where they ended up defeating the then number one North Carolina Tar Heels, who ended up having a free fall after that game. I don't think they ended up making the tournament that last year. And everybody was wondering what happened to Hubert Davis. Thought that he might get canned. Might think that Final Four run that they had a few years back was just a fluke. But here he is, having them back as the number one overall, or not number one overall seed, but the number one seed in the West bracket. And Alabama's going to have their hands full. This is a game where I have no expectations. It's a game where I expect North Carolina to win just because of, one, their front court talent is incredible. Armando Bacot, Harrison Ingram. Harrison Ingram is someone that I've always admired. With him, he is a super talented kid, now a junior. I loved him at Stanford. Alabama actually played Harrison Ingram when Stanford defeated Alabama in 21-22 season, in that early season tournament. And he was only a freshman then, but you could tell how good he was going to be. And he's just taking it to a new level now. He was always around a 31% three-point shooter, and he's now up to 38. He's jumped his field goal percentage up to 43%. He's a poor free throw shooter, but he's a guy that makes such a huge impact, averaging 11 points, 5 or 7 rebounds, and a steal per game. And you pair him with a guy as dominant as Armando Bacot, you got a formidable, formidable front court. Now, that's really all they have in the front court. I say that's all they have. They're both elite level players, but they're a primarily heavy guard player. Backcourt team. Obviously, RJ Davis, one of the best guards in the country, averaging 21 points per game on 41% three-point shooting. Cormac Ryan, Alabama will remember him as he was the guy that went off for 20, what was it, 27 points in the Notre Dame win in the NCAA tournament just a few years ago. He averages 11 points per game, 35% from three. And then Elliott Cadeau and then Seth Trimble, two guys that don't play as much as the others, but they're solid guys that just come in and contribute in so many different ways. Elliott is a very good he's a very good facilitator. He leads the team with four assists per game in only 24 minutes time, which is actually a very incredible when you think about it. So looking at North Carolina, I've only seen them a few times this year. I watched them against NC State, where NC State beat them in the ACC Conference Championship game. And North Carolina State with DJ Burns Jr. had a guy that could neutralize Armando Bacot, not dominate him or take him away completely, but somebody that could, you know, neutralize the playing field. Alabama just doesn't have that guy. Now, when Charles Bediako was at Alabama last year, he gave Armando Bacot fits in that tournament game, gave him fits. You could see Armando Bacot was super frustrated at times playing against Bediako. He was just bigger and really understood angles. And that's something Bacot does well also. So big key for Alabama is to try to get him in foul trouble, just attack the lane. If you can get him out, that opens up the rim totally, because they don't really have anyone else that's able to defend the rim near as well as Armando Bacot. They only average four blocks a game, and Bacot has a block and a half of that per game. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do and what kind of game plan Alabama's going to have, because RJ Davis is going to get his. Bacot's probably going to get his. It's going to be these role guys like Harrison Ingram, Cormac Ryan, Cadeau, and Trimble. You're going to have to keep them neutralized. Role players win, or teams with great role players' performances win games in the NCAA tournament. Happens every single year, every single round, pretty much every single game. You can have the star player like RJ Davis or Mark Sears, but you need these other guys like Rylan Griffins or the Cormac Rhines to step up and have really good games. So that, I think that's going to be the plan for Alabama, is RJ Davis, he's going to score, he's going to get his. Alabama's backcourt is not good at all defensively, so he's going to pretty much get his way. But if you can kind of limit some of these guys to not reach their per-game averages and kind of keep them below their game averages, that's where if Alabama can just hit shots. I mean, they were very poor offensively tonight, and they still won, albeit against a Grand Canyon team. This is nowhere near what North Carolina is. So it's going to be very, very intriguing. I saw that North Carolina opened up as a four-point favorite in this game, which is about right. I thought it might be three and a half, but it's four. Over-under at 173.5. It's going to be a high-scoring game. So get ready. Grab your popcorn. It's going to be a fantastic game. And hopefully Alabama can keep it close enough to the final two or three minutes, because I think Alabama can win any game when it gets that close, because they can really score at the end of the game. Now, I saved a little bit of time. I wanted to discuss Nate Oates. I cannot say more than what our Rylan Griffin said after the game, saying he is the GOAT. He is the GOAT. He's hadn't got a national championship yet, but it's going to be coming. And he's my favorite Alabama coach of all time. So, yes, he's the greatest of all time to me in that regard. But what he's done to change Alabama basketball is nothing short of amazing. I'm 32 years old. I saw one Sweet 16 run in my lifetime, which was, you know, I was born right after Wimp Sanderson, so I didn't get to see any of that. But in my time of being a big-time Alabama basketball fan, I never really got to enjoy any NCAA tournament run. And now I'm getting to enjoy what has been three in 4 years. Now, whether they win this game or not doesn't change my opinion on this team. This team has overperformed in every way. And whatever happens, happens in this game. I'd love for them to make the Elite Eight for the second time in program history. I know that their hands are going to be full with this, but just enjoy it. We've been praying for this, begging for this, our whole fandom of Alabama basketball. But this has been another episode of the Alabama or the Double Dribble Podcast, your source for all things Alabama basketball. Appreciate you listening to another episode. Please like or subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. I will release another episode after Thursday night's game. And then, if the season ends there, I'll go straight into the transfer portal where Alabama landed a huge transfer from Pepperdine and Houston Millett. Who I just did a feature with his dad, who's a super great person. But until next time, appreciate you listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. Adios.